Hello, I'm Nadia Frontier, and welcome to another episode of the Ice World podcast, where I chat to the ordinary people who do extraordinary jobs in Antarctica, one of the world's most remote and inhospitable locations. Today, I'm joined by Ed Luke, who's currently working offshore and also freelances as a mountain leader, and Tom Davis Merry, who's joining me in the podcast studio in Cambridge months before his deployment to Antarctica. I've managed to catch him during this busy period of pre-deployment training, which happens each year before staff are sent to the many Antarctic bases. In the last episode, we talked about pre-deployment training, in which you learn the day-to-day skills you'll need on the Antarctic stations, as well as preparing you for what to expect, both mentally and physically. This time, we're looking at what to pack, because if you forget something, you can't just order online or have it delivered the next day. And it's not just the practical things you need. We'll also talk about the personal touches and the little luxuries that will make Antarctica feel like a home.
Ed and Tom, welcome to the Ice World podcast. Thank you very much for joining me for this episode. Could you please start by introducing yourselves and talking us through how your journey with BAS started? We'll start with Ed, as you are a returner.
So I started working with BAS a few years ago, and I was in the same seat that Tom sat in now. Went down as a field guide with you, Nadia, and many others, and had a brilliant time, a great way to work and experience something completely new.
And you've been back, Ed, in a different capacity with the British Antarctic Survey, but at McMurdo Station.
Yeah, so the last time I went down was to work through the American program, which was a really cool experience, actually. So quite amazing to get to the biggest research station on the continent and just see how the Americans do things, which, as you can probably imagine, is pretty spectacular. Lots of people, lots of moving parts, and lots of very big aircrafts.
Quite the contrast. And Tom, welcome to the studio. Would you like to tell us about your journey with the British Antarctic Survey, please?
Yes, great. And thank you for having me here. Yeah, I think my journey really started probably as a student. So, you know, 10 years or so ago now, where I went to Liverpool and joined the mountaineering club there. And that's where I sort of fell in love with climbing and being in the mountains. But I was also there reading physics. So I've also always had a real passion for the sciences. And that's where I first heard about BAS as well, through friends I had in Liverpool. After graduating, I then decided I was going to join the military. So I had to decide between a career as a scientist or to go down the military route. And I chose to join the military, where I had lots of different roles over a sort of 8-year period. And I think the best thing I ever did there was in the humanitarian sector. So yeah, really interesting, really varied. But after sort of 8 years, it was my time to go on and do something different. I then became an engineer for about 12 months, so you just threw something different in. But really in the back of my mind this whole time was, can I bring together like my love for the outdoors and this sort of passion for the sciences? And BAS was something I'd always wanted to do. And the stars kind of aligned. It felt like the right time. So put the application in and here I am. So quite an interesting journey to get here, but it is brilliant. I feel like I've come home, so it's great.
And Tom, you told me that you've heard about the British Antarctic Survey since your undergraduate days. So many years ago, how did you get that on your radar?
Yeah, sure. Yes, it was. So Liverpool's got a really good sort of oceanography program, and we had lots of people who were studying as part of that program in the mountaineering club. And I think for them, it was seen as an organization that they really aspired to work with, and you know, spoke of really favorably. And that's where I first heard about it. And then when you're in these climbing communities, there are always people who have either worked with BAS or who really want to work in that sort of field guide or field department sort of role. And so it was something I'd kind of been around, and I'd been around people who had done it and who were sort of super excited about it and had all these amazing stories about things they'd done. But I guess it was never quite the right time for me until it was the right time. And so, yeah, here I am.
And Ed, similarly, your career trajectory wasn't necessarily outdoor instructing as you might expect a field guide in Antarctica to have followed. So what was your journey and career path?
Yeah, I've basically just been out and doing rope access since I was about 20. So I think that's one of the nice things about BAS that I've realized recently is that because I never went to university, I never had that sort of core group of lifelong friends. But now I've been to BAS, I've got this sort of like group of lifelong friends. And they're like the ultimate house guests because they like clean up after themselves. A lot of the time they make the food for you and they're just incredibly low maintenance. So yeah, such a lovely group of people.
So Tom, you've never been south before. How are you feeling about this adventure ahead of you?
I think I'm this big mix of like super excited, you know, lots of questions about what it's going to be like, a little bit nervous, but in a good way, you know, really conscious that I've got this like big adventure coming up and there's like lots of things I've got to do and lots of things I've got to prepare and get ready. But no, so far so good. And yeah, just feeling super excited. I'm just really aware that we've got quite a big role when we're out there and we've got a lot of things we've got to do, a lot of things we've got to think about. So we've got to make good decisions. And yeah, we've got a super kind of supportive team and really good training. So yeah, not something I'm worried about, but just something that I'm conscious of and I'm aware of.
And have you any advice for that almost imposter syndrome, taking on quite a lot of responsibilities, that you could give to Tom?
I would just say, yeah, take every opportunity in your stride, really. I think at the end of the day, you will be hard matched to work in any job or industry where you're surrounded by as motivated people ever again. So just to make the most of that and appreciate them and what they bring to the table, really appreciate the opportunity you've got and where that's going to take you, because it is quite a unique job that maybe one day won't be as available or even exist anymore. So I think it's a very cool job to have and the opportunity to have.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah.
No pressure. No pressure, but yeah. Definitely make the most of it.
And Tom, you're in this crazy stage of packing. So you've just sent your P box to the store. So that's your box that you have for the whole of winter. I'm guessing you're pretty good at packing in general because you are a field guide. You've got to be super organized in the mountains and on expeditions. But have you ever had to pack for 18 months before?
No. Is the short answer. Yeah, never had to pack for more than about sort of 3 or 4 months at a time. And it's really different as well, because you're going into a station which actually has a lot of the sort of basic and some of the, you know, the comforts that you need. So really it's just trying to think of the things that will make your space that like a little bit more homely, and things that will sort of brighten it up a little bit for you. So yeah, I've got some towels and some a nice, you know, color-coded shower curtain and a little bath mat and some books and that sort of thing and some photos. And usually if you're packing to go on a Himalayan expedition, a bath mat is the last thing that you think about. So it's a little bit different, I think, the way we approach this, because actually Rollera does have a lot of the things down there that we'll need.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of an advice maybe, Ed, you might agree, but not to overpack, right?
Yeah, I mean, we certainly got there and realised there was everything you could need. So I guess, like you're saying, Tom, the personal things or the personal touches, and probably just lots of normal clothes, lots of nice, comfortable, normal clothes. Because in reality, all the technical stuff is taken care of by and large. And also maybe a lot, not a lot, but quite a few smart clothes, because it is nice to dress up now and again, to have that packed and with you. I think's actually not a bad shout.
I've got a suit as well that's in there, and my slippers.
Yeah.
Oh, slippers and suit are a great combination. I think that would go great for midwinters.
Yeah, I think you wear them together, right? That's
absolutely. But yeah, there are loads of occasions to dress up and have celebrations, which I definitely didn't anticipate and did not have enough clothes for that. But there is a fancy dress room where there are things that are suitable to wear to a nice dinner.
I've heard lots of good things about this fancy dress room.
Oh, you're going to absolutely love it. Do you get some guidance on what to bring during this pre-deployment week? It's kind of the time where you have your deadline, you have to have already packed most of your winter gear. So how do you know what to take with you?
Yeah, it's really tricky. But yeah, we do get lots of really useful advice. We get a letter from the sort of current wintering team that talks us through like what to expect, what's been going on, and also has a bit of a packing guide in it. So we can go through that and kind of tick off the most important things, but also just chatting to the returners, chatting to sort of other people within the field ops sort of team. Yeah, we've had lots of good advice. Everyone's really happy to share their top tips. Yeah, so it's not been as stressful as I think it actually could have been. It's gone okay.
Ed, did you take anything different when you went down with the US program compared to when you initially packed for Bass and had absolutely probably no idea what to take?
Not really. There's just certain sort of little bits and bobs that you think, oh yeah, the Black Diamond Mercury mitt, got to have a set of them. They're essential. basically anything you can't make or recreate or find there. So when it comes to normal climbing equipment and clothing for the field, that's belt and braces covered, but anything you can think of that is unique. And also, yeah, because I think, Tom, there is something generally in that letter about pictures and decorations for your walls and things like that. And I probably kind of neglected that quite a bit, but it is worth having some hard copy pictures because it's just nice to have that memory within your room for the winter. It's actually quite a valuable thing to do and take some time to prepare.
And Tom, you still got time, right? How many days until or weeks until you deploy south?
I've got a couple of months. Yeah, got about 2.5 months before I go.
So definitely time to get your face wrap ready then. There's other luxury items and little home comforts that are really important. What else would you advise other than decorating your room? I know you sent me a lovely care package when I was in my second winter that had lots of good things. So yeah, what else could we pack?
Yeah, I think Jas had the best one when asked what he put in his pee box, and he said he just filled it full of food. Which for a man with Italian heritage is quite appropriate. It made a lot of sense. And I think Pete had his marmalade made by his sister. So little things like that. So any really nice food that is going to last a long time. And things like dates or, yeah, any food like that. Anything that's not chocolate or got sugar in, because there's plenty of that down there.
But nice chocolate, I actually would disagree. I think we need some nice, dark, fancy chocolate.
Homemade chutney, that's gone in there as well.
You've done that already?
The chutney's in.
Oh, and who made it? Did you?
It was my uncle's chutney, actually. Oh. Yeah, yeah. 2016 Windfall, it's called. Yeah.
Wow. He's been keeping that for a while.
Vintage year.
Amazing. Having preserves are very good. But definitely, I also think some honey and some nice like cloths and throws for the bed, and maybe your own bedding as well. There is bedding on station, but it's grey.
Yeah, I've got some bedding in there as well.
Very good. Sounds like you're well briefed, and I assume you've read the letter that the winterers have written from the previous team to try to advise a little bit about what to take.
Yes, we do. Yeah, we get a letter from the current wintering team, and it's really nice. It's a couple of pages long. It's got some photos in there. It's got some advice. It tells you about the station. It tells you what they've been doing, tells you how to prepare, a few useful things to pack. And it's a really nice kind of like welcome as well. So it's useful and it's interesting, but it's also, yeah, a sort of welcome and look forward to coming down. So it's a nice little touch that Basti, yeah.
Do you have an exhaustive library of books with you? Ed, I think that's something you took down, right? Loads of books.
Yeah, I did take down quite a few books. In reality, there are a lot of books down there, a lot of good books as well. So if anything, it's maybe like your favourite books that you would then share with people or contribute to the library, which grows and grows.
So I've got 14 books in my pee box. Maybe that's a bit too many, I'm not sure.
It depends how much you read. And I'd say in a normal year, I'd probably read 4 a year.
I could get through, well, I planned off a book a month was my way of doing it, and a couple extra ones. But also I'm a bit of a traditionalist, and I like to have a proper physical, like paperback book. So no Kindle and just the actual books.
There's always something more interesting to do than reading, I find. But yeah, I don't think I read any of them.
No, I'd agree that, you know, people, I think it's a personality thing. I think certain people are just really good at managing their time. And then maybe the rest of us just find things to do all the time.
And who knows how much time I'll be spent in a tent in a whiteout somewhere for days on end. So
actually, that is true. I remember being with Ed in a tent. We had 4 days and I read a whole book, and it was really,
well, that's it.
It was transformative. 400-page book. Yeah. Never done that before. Tom, talking of pyramid tents then, have you ever slept in a pyramid tent before?
Nope, never, never. And yeah, the bath systems are so sort of specific to that polar environment that you would never see them anywhere else apart from in the polar regions. So no, it'll be a totally new experience. We've put them up. We've had a look at them. We've had a play around with them as part of some of our pre-deployment training. But yeah, the pyramid tent, it's quite an iconic thing to see it in all the photos and all the historical photos. So yeah, to actually get into them and use them is, yeah, really cool. Looking forward to it.
And it, like you said as well, it can also be your home for a couple of months. So Ed, what would you take to decorate your pyramid tent to make it cozy?
Yeah, I do remember watching some YouTube clips before I went south for the first time. I think it was like Tom Sylvester just was on there saying, oh, well, I spend most of my time living in a tent. And I thought, nah, no way. And then I got there and I was like, oh yeah, yeah, you do.
Fairy lights.
Fairy light. Oh yeah, fairy lights for the winter, for sure. Yeah, that's really nice, isn't
in
it?
Your having tent.
Fairy lights. Well, now you tell me, what did you enjoy from the tent experience?
I think some really good things to have are a mini Connect 4. That's quite a useful game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or just anyway, a selection of games. And we had some fairy lights to decorate the tent. A speaker is essential. You can have a little rave in your pyramid tent, you know, things get desperate. And something that Ed was really good at was baking. For the week, not in the tent.
Ah, okay.
Sorry, no oven, unfortunately, is carried on the skidoo or hauling. You've talked about going on expeditions to the Himalayas. Do you ever take any comforts during those time when you're at base camp for a couple of weeks?
Yeah, I do. I find it's often the small little things that make all the difference. So just a book or two, like I'll take a journal, you know, maybe a couple of photos, you know, ear pods, that sort of thing, or a nice hat. Yeah, I really appreciate like a good woolly hat is a bit of a game changer. And base camp booties, like big insulated slippers. Absolute game changer. But really it's, small little things can make all the difference.
Yeah, I think those booties as well, there are quite a collection in the stores. Tom, how are you getting your luggage to Antarctica then? So you've sent your P box to the stores and you'll also be going via aircraft and then ship?
Yes. Yeah. So I've dropped off my P box, has gone into stores, and my ski bag as well. So I'm taking my skis down with some ski touring bits and pieces, and my ski boots have gone in there as well. And I thought that was pretty cool to take your own skis to Antarctica. So I thought, it's got to be done. Got to do that. Got the P box. So that's all gone. That's been sort of dropped off. And then when I go down, so I'm flying to Montevideo, so Uruguay. We have there maybe 24 hours turnaround, and then we're on the ship for about 2 weeks. So for that part of the journey, I'll have my Bass issued kit bag. And that's everything that we've been given for like field use. And then I'll have my own bag. So that's your normal sort of 20, 23 kilos as if you're going on a normal commercial flight. And then a little day sack that I'll just carry with me. And so anything else I want to take, you know, personal clothing, comfy stuff, extra books, whatever it is, that all goes in that 20 kilo bag, just as if I was going on holiday.
And then you'll get your P-Box when you arrive on station. If you're then going down on the ship, in theory, your P-Box should then be offloaded with you.
In theory, but I think this year is a little bit different because we've got all the construction work going on. And so there's slightly different priorities for what's on the ship and when things are getting there. So we might have to wait for perhaps a month or so before the P-Box arrives. But we'll see. Yeah, don't know.
Going to go to preserves for without a month. That's going to be...
I won't have my own bed sheets for a whole month.
So Tom, we're recording this in the pre-deployment training week, and this is where everyone is heading south and training and getting together. What's the general vibe like? How is it meeting your winter team for the first time?
It's been really cool. PDT has been amazing, and I think none of us appreciated the number of people. So there's about 150 people at PDT, which is wild to think about. Like, we're sending that many people south. But everyone's backgrounds are like so interesting. Everyone's doing different roles. They've come from different places. Like, everyone's journey to get here has been really different, but everyone's super excited and just kind of like getting involved in everything. And then I've just come back from a weekend with the winter team. So there's 31 of us. And we went away for a couple of days to get away from Cambridge and just have a bit of time together as a smaller group to, do some team building. So we did some rafting, did like a go eight high ropes course. We were cooking together and we did some sessions around sort of like winter specific bits of training that we need to think about. But just really great just to get us all together in one place. And we feel like we sort of are coming together as a team, which is really nice.
That's such a fun way of doing it. Ed, are you feeling a little bit of jealousy there, given our COVID pre-deployment training and lack of team building?
Well, there was that, but also I think the boarding of the ship, the James Clark Ross, after 2 weeks of living in a hotel room individually, I think that evening I had such a like an electric kind of atmosphere to it. You know, we were leaving the UK, we were leaving COVID behind, we were leaving like our lives behind and starting off on this like mad adventure. And I think, you know, that's a very memorable moment for me.
That's so true. Do you remember also how you felt during those pre-deployment weeks? I know it was COVID and it was all a bit strange, but we did training and there was opportunity to meet up with people.
I mean, it is quite exciting, isn't it? Because you're meeting this team that you're going to spend a lot of time with. I mean, nerve-wracking is the wrong term, but you're definitely like sort of sussing each other out. And I did find that quite fascinating when you are down on station and you've been there for your stint or most of it, and then the new team start arriving and they're all quite, they all start like kind of, you know, be really nice and put the best foot forward and all this sort of persona sort of stuff. I think that's what you notice about teams that have been together for a long time. They have that sort of relaxed sort of demeanor around each other, which I think is really quite nice.
When you actually first meet those people, it is quite strange. There is a pressure to actually get to like them and make a good impression.
Yeah, we definitely all kind of come into this like trying to put our best face on sort of thing and trying to come across like really friendly and personable like all the time. And it's actually quite tiring, isn't it?
It's exhausting.
Yeah.
Oh, it's absolutely exhausting. And you're not being yourself. You can't really relax. And everyone, you're kind of having the same conversation all the time. But then there's also a really cool energy because like you were telling me earlier as well, Tom, that you've got plans of what you would like to do over the winter, like your bake-off, for example.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think we've already got the five-a-side football teams agreed. And the bake-off plans are in. And yeah, lots of really, really other sort of fun things that I think people want to do. And who knows if we'll actually do them or not. But I think it's great that people are so enthusiastic and like want to do all this stuff.
And it is important to remember that, Ed. Maybe we are slightly jaded as time has now passed, but we had all these plans and ambitions to do so many things. And it is so lovely to have that in. It's quite rare to start a job and then to build your community around you. Normally, like, you're the new person in your job, right? And everyone kind of has their flow. But this is now, you all start this new job at the same time, which is pretty crazy. And then you can all, like, choose and you all go into a different life. And you have no idea what to expect. And you're going to like one of the literally most remote places in the world.
Yeah, it's really weird, isn't it? And I don't think there's any other like profession or role where you actually have to like worry about this. Or normally you just come into an organization and you have to like fit into the culture there. Whereas here, I think like we get this opportunity to like shape that and we can make it the culture that we want it to be. It's sort of like going back to school again. It's really bizarre. Really exciting.
Definitely. I remember that energy. Ed, do you remember before we boarded the ship and before quarantine, what you did as your last things in the UK, like touching grass?
Yeah, I think, well, the memory I have the most is that I went to Buttermere in the Lake District, which is where I'm from. And I remember sort of walking around that just to sort of see the trees one last time. And it's a very beautiful place.
That's funny you say that, Ed, because I grew up in the Lake District. And I know Buttermere very well, and it's a beautiful place. And I think one of the last things I'll do will probably be to go home to the Lake District and swim in one of the lakes for the last time. So, yeah, pretty fitting.
That's cool. It's like a ritual, isn't it?
It is, and it's
going to be a bit autumnal by the time you're about to deploy. There'll be loads of mushrooms out. I remember like making this mushroom guide during quarantine, and I was like, oh, this might be the last time I see mushrooms. And I kind of like remember my last run just before we got taken on a bus to the ship. Like, how long do you go in your life without seeing trees and green vegetation? Not really that long.
Nothing like this.
Like a ski holiday or an excursion, couple months. But it's quite serious. So have you, apart from going for the swim, Tom, is there anything else in your last final pre-deployment period that you would like to achieve before going away?
I think what I actually want to achieve is to try and go south having had a bit of calm. Because often when I've gone away on expeditions before, you're sort of working up until the Friday and then you're on a flight on the Saturday and it's always chaos and it's always last minute and you've always got like funding coming in last minute and you've got kit that you're packing the night before and it's like always just total carnage. And which is fine when you're going away for a month because it's just sort of like part of the adventure. But I think for this, I actually just want to have like some peace and quiet before I go and just feel like I'm kind of ready and that I've done everything and that I'm not running around at the last minute. I probably will be. I'm sure that's what happens. But yeah, just a bit of calm and just sort of spend time with friends and see family again and, yeah, go and swim in Buttermere, whatever it is. But yeah, just a bit of calm would be quite nice.
I think you can definitely achieve that the way that it works at British Antarctic Survey, the fact that you've already had your packing deadline, you would have finished your training before then. There is like a little bit of a small period that you then can like hopefully just live your life a little bit and get that peace.
Yeah, definitely. And it's great the way they've done it, particularly with us as like the field department where we started training a couple of months ago. So we've had lots of time to like think about things and start packing things and kind of get our lives in order, I think. So it's nice the way that BAS give people the time to do that. And then you also have a bit of time before you actually deploy to really just finish everything up. So yeah, I think so. I think it's achievable.
Yeah, I hope so. Do you remember being a bit peaceful, Ed, before deploying?
Well, we had 2 weeks in a hotel, so that was pretty peaceful. I think I had a week in Norway.
Boring.
That was really
that was
cool.
Not peaceful.
It's pretty mad, like getting on that coach to the port and be like, wow, these are the last trees I'm going to see for a long time. But then there's other small details like the pilot boat and the pilot getting back on the pilot boat down the wooden ladder and getting his phone out and taking a picture. And you're like, wow, that's pretty cool if the pilot's taking a picture of your ship, because I'm sure he doesn't do that every day.
Yeah, true. To conclude then, Ed, what do you take away from Antarctica? Now it's been 5 years. What would you say it still means to you in your current life?
I would say the lifelong friends, probably the main one. So it's sort of like extended family, which is really nice, like really, really nice indeed. And then I think it's this place that you will always have a sort of connection with. So it is really cool to be able to go back occasionally and spend some time down there. And although no one is a local to Antarctica, it's quite nice to have actually maybe lived there is the wrong term, but you know, the British term, that would be how we'd say it, isn't it? Have lived in Antarctica. So yeah, there's not many people that ever get that opportunity and that sort of experience. So to be a local to Antarctica, as it were, I think it's pretty cool.
And Tom, what do you think Antarctica will bring to you? What's the anticipation?
I think similar to Ed, like just the friendships that you'll make down there. It's lifelong friends, and it's you become part of this little community, I guess, of, and even people that you weren't down there with, just anyone else who's been to Antarctica, you then feel like you have this sort of connection with. And you know, you can talk about things that nobody else will really understand until you've actually been down there and experienced it. And I think that's quite a privileged sort of community to be in. Like, it is a pretty special thing, I think, what we do down there and the people that go down there. So, yeah, really hard to know yet. But I think it'll be that sense of, like, connection and relationships with people that you form. Be pretty special. Yeah.
I think you'll be amazed to know how many people have actually been to Antarctica. I find this a lot where I, like, joined a sports club in Cambridge a couple of years ago. And the guy that picked me up was like, oh, yeah, I was in Antarctica, like, 30 years ago. And I was like, what the hell?
Yeah, it's wild. Yeah, we spoke to our neighbours and, like, turned out their son had been or something like that. And it's amazing how many people have somehow had some connection to it.
Ed, thanks for making time whilst being offshore and sitting in a cupboard or having a free room.
Thanks, Nads. Thanks for having me on the show, and hope to see you again soon.
And Tom, good luck with also your final preparations and your journey south. It's going to be so exciting. I'm actually kind of jealous of you sat in that seat right now. Kind of wish I could do it all again.
It's been a pleasure. Really enjoyed it. Yeah, good to meet both of you. Thanks.
Have a great adventure, Tom.
So if you ever find yourself heading to Antarctica, don't forget to pack the dark chocolate, and you also will definitely not need as many books as you think. And if you're looking for that big change in scenery and completely new role, visit bas.ac.uk/jobs/vacancies, where all the latest openings are posted. And tune in to our episode next time about Antarctic fashion, where you'll get the lowdown on dressing for temperature extremes and what's provided to help you in your role at whichever station you're posted to. If you enjoy Ice World, make sure you let us know. You can leave a review on the Ice World page or wherever you get your podcasts. And please like and share. It all helps us reach new subscribers. I'm Nadia Frontier, and thank you for listening.